Hi, and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla.
We're both professional registered homeopaths, and between us have over 25 years of professional practice in this field of healing.
The Homeopathy Health Show is the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcasts around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing and healthcare, which is suitable for all ages, young and old.
Every week, we invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy.
Visit www.ukhealthradio.com to listen now. To find out more about us, you can visit us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk. And whilst you are there, do subscribe to our newsletter.
Be inspired.
And join the conversation.
So let's begin today's show here on the UK Health Radio Network, the world's number one talk health radio.
Real feel good radio.
Hi, and welcome to another inspiring episode of the award-winning Homeopathy Health Show, the voice of homeopathy, bringing you global experts, deep insights, and real clinical wisdom. Woohoo indeed. Broadcasting on the UK Health Radio Network and all major podcast platforms. Ladies and gentlemen, 65,000 unique weekly listeners in over 75 countries of this beautiful Earth, planet, world. We are absolutely honored to welcome one of the most influential and innovative thinkers in contemporary homeopathy, a teacher whose work has inspired practitioners around the world to look beyond simplistic interpretations of cases and remedies and towards a deeper understanding of complexity, pattern, and human experience.
Dr. Massimo Maglevori, I'm so inspired by you, but for our audience, he's a medical doctor and homeopath based in Modena, Italy. Having qualified in medicine in 1984, he has dedicated decades to clinical practice, research, teaching, and the ongoing evolution of homeopathic understanding. Internationally respected for his profound contributions to materia medica, case-taking, and remedy analysis, Massimo has become one of the most sought-after educators in the homeopathic world. Massimo is perhaps best known for his method of complexity, which we have done a podcast on. If you have not heard it, you can go back and listen to it. It's an approach that seeks to understand the intricate relationship between physical symptoms, emotional experiences, behaviors, personal history, and the broader context of a patient's life.
Now, what makes Dr. Massimo's work particularly fascinating is the breadth of perspective he brings into remedy study, and it is absolutely fantastic, for want of a better word. His research draws not only from traditional materia medica, but also from natural history, anthropology, psychology, culture, mythology, and human experience. Through this lens, remedies emerge as complex living patterns rather than just a collection of disconnected symptoms.
And earlier this year in March, we had the privilege of hosting Dr. Maglevori in the UK for a highly successful seminar exploring neurodiversity through the lens of homeopathy. The response was overwhelmingly positive, and many attendees left inspired by the depth, originality, and practicality of Massimo's teaching. Helping to make this possible is our second guest today, Tumumi Miyakawa. Tumumi, did I say it right? Tumumi,
yes.
Miyakawa.
Yes.
Tumumi, Tumumi graduated from the University of Edinburgh in plant science with a specialization in biochemistry before going on to study homeopathy and integrated medicine at the University of Westminster, qualifying in 2004.
And since then, she has practiced as a homeopath in London while also integrating other complementary disciplines into her work. And we had the good fortune, of course, of meeting in March, both Nyla and I, and that was wonderful indeed. Tumumi's connection with Dr. Massimo's teaching deepened in 2024 when she worked as his English-Japanese interpreter during a seminar in Japan.
So today we'll be exploring Dr. Maglevori's approach to pain management, reflections from this year's neurodiversity seminar, and what practitioners can look forward to when he returns to London later this year. Yes, you heard it right. He's coming back to the UK for all of you. Massimo Tumumi, it is a pleasure to welcome you both to the Homeopathy Health Show. Welcome.
Many thanks.
Well, that the time we took to introduce, I think that's the end of today's podcast, isn't it? So, yeah. But it was much, much needed, with the greatest absolute love and respect to both of you. It's just an absolute delight to have you back, Dr. Massimo, and of course to introduce you to Mumi.
Thank you.
Before we go any further, I always wanted to ask you this question, since I heard about this seminar of yours on pain management. Why this topic, Massimo?
Oh, there are several reasons. First of all, from the very anthropological point of view, if you think about it, pain is the most common experience that very probably from the very beginning of medicine was the main reason that made two person meeting each other, one in the role of the patient, of the suffering one, the other one in the role of someone who thinks that he could do probably something. We don't know if it is an omnipotent idea or something true, but you know, whenever there is someone suffering, very often there is someone else who has the impression, the delusion, the skills to try to help. So pain very often is the first experience that makes two people meeting each other. And then even if this is something so common, so ancient, it is something that belongs to animals as well to plants, according to what we started recently. We still don't know enough. It is a big issue, so big that we have hospitals that are completely devoted to study and to try to treat chronic pains with, you know, not always very good results. And still, we really don't know what pain it is. And I think that we should consider how much the rest of our system, not just what we consider our body, physical body, has implication in our experience of suffering. I had a very interesting experience in Paris. There was years ago a very tiny, beautiful hospital where they were treating patients with cancer or other very serious terminal diseases in the last stage of their life. And they mainly tried to work to help these people to suffer less. And it was so interesting that, for example, if the hospital can work in a way to go closer to the necessity of the patient and not to the necessity of the hospital, many things can change. Think about it, for example, if you're suffering and if you are at the end of your life, you could have the desire of sleeping 16 hours. It's not possible in any hospital. Or you can face the idea that your life is at the end and still some problems, some issues, some other sufferances are still, you know, hanging in your soul, in your mind. You can call it as you want. And often they help this person, first of all, to investigate in that. And if they can, for example, to try to contact this person to which something is still not completely solved. And they see wonderful results with this. So just, we say just, it's not just at all, changing the setting where this poor person is living can reduce enormously the amount of painkillers, which is not only something that interesting from the toxicological point of view. I think it's also interesting to ask to ourselves, what is pain? What does it mean? How much? There are so many other implications that very often we do not consider. And also, if you think about extreme experience of suffering, where very probably the pain is so much, so extreme, as I say, that our body has to try to disconnect our mind from our physical body in a coma state. And if you think about that, apparently we consider that in this coma situation, we are not completely there. But there are evident demonstration, clear evidence, that if you allow the wife, the husband, the son, you know, the father, a good friend of this person, to talk with this guy who is in coma, they can resuscitate and come out better from that experience, quicker. If you allow certain kind of music to just pass through the only sense that you can use, because these people cannot touch or do anything else, they have their eyes closed, we think that they cannot perceive, and it's not true, because this is leading us to think about what is our consciousness, which is something very probably which does not have to do anything with our brain. It has to do with our as a person. Often, for example, in homeopathy, we consider how much are important the so-called mind symptoms. And very often we do not consider that our mind is not at all just the production of this big gland. Our mind is the production of our entire system. And what is so interesting is that in conventional medicine, up to now, let's say, the interest about pain is mainly in a kind of a quantitative approach. How much do you suffer in a scale from 1 to 10? But in our case, it's very different. Because, as I said in my seminars as well, homeopathic medicine from the very beginning is not the medicine of our physical body. The physical body is the one that is studied by conventional medicine and is the body of everybody. So everybody has a glycemia, has a cholesterol, and other values in his blood. If you think about the corpus is very different. Because it has not to do with our mind in the classical sense of this word. The corpus is the subjective physical stuff. If you listen to what a very interesting philosopher, just like Merleau-Ponty, said about the corpus, they always said that the corpus is always the corpus of somebody. The corpus is always the corpus of a precise person. It's not the corpus of anthropos, of human being. And you see, in homeopathy, since the very beginning, we give a completely different view to suffering. For us, it's very important to try to collect how this patient is reporting his way of suffering, which kind of position they have to use in order to suffer less. How this pain is reported, if it is something piercing, tearing, penetrating, destroying, burning, or making you suffer in a different way, all these objectives are outrageously important. Because in the right moment that you can use your voice to define a pain, you are mature enough to put some connection between your living experiences in the way that you suffer. And this can be extremely helpful for us. When a patient is insisting that a pain is tearing you, is so excruciating, is so maddening, or it is just on the surface of your body. All this kind of information very often for conventional medicine are not that important. For us can be crucial, because this has to do with the way that a person is suffering. This is meaningful. It is telling to us a lot.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling.
cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And I think it is so interesting because nowadays, in several fields of scientists studying suffering, they are discovering finally that a good treatment for a chronic pain patient has to be individualized. We do this since the very beginning of the existence of homeopathy. And from the very beginning, we are interested in how your precise body, how your corpus is suffering, is producing problems. And it is very important for us to help our patient to describe us what you can do on your own beyond drugs.
Mm.
Even if they don't know in this moment, what you suggest is already helping this patient to recognize that they do have a resilience. And this pain is not just something that fell on your head, is something which is the result of how you live. And you can do something on that. To the doctor, to a good homeopath, together with a good homeopath, not just considering taking pills that should, cut off this pain. They are important, but not always.
It's interesting, isn't it, Tumumi, because Dr. Massimo mentioned music as well, and pain is in itself is such a phenomena. You know, it's a phenomena, pain. And when we look at it, there was recently social media, there was some, I can't call it music, it was sound of children playing. Like when you drive past or you're walking down a road in the summer and children are in the playground, it's so soothing, that sound sometimes. You know, because it takes you back. And this music was based on this. And it was in about 20 seconds. But it leaves you so sad because it's painful because it takes you to memories which may be nice, but sometimes to memories which may be not so nice. It's a strange phenomenon, isn't it? Like Massimo has mentioned, you know, pain and what it really is in depth and in substance, you know?
I think any deep experience can be evoked by all the other senses. I think all our deep emotions are often connected with, say, smell, sound, touch. So I think it kind of makes sense also that when other senses are triggered, then these deep emotions come back.
Mm.
This is very interesting thread that you have started here, actually. Because I've always thought about why is the way a patient describes pain is often more important for us than the intensity of the pain itself. Like for us homeopaths, how they are describing is more important, but for you, as you are working with pain, can you, for our audience, describe, because they can't, when the patient come to us, we ask them to describe, and they just say, it just hurts.
Yes, but I think that connects to what Dr. Massimo was saying about if they have the maturity to be able to express, if they're experiencing this deep enough and have capacity to express? Is it something that you can express in words or not? That also comes into equation, I think.
Yeah, but it's what? Yeah, Massimo, I think you get what I'm trying to say.
I think that if we use a wider perspective, if it is so interesting, what years ago we used to call something about hysterical patients, which very often hyperreactive, where the suffering is so extreme and confused. Together with this, it's not a fault of our patient if he's not able to tell about that. As you have patients which are hypersensitive, you have patients which are hyposensitive. There is a concept that I will talk about in our second meeting in London, which is about an idea that I studied since years ago, that I used to call the protopathic pains. What does it mean, protopathic? In order to describe, as Tomomi said before, a way of suffering, you need a kind of maturation, which means that you are mature enough to make a kind of association in your experience that this pain looks like something burning, that this pain looks like something piercing, that this pain is just on the surface of your body or is very deep into your bones, or other kind of description. Like when you dream in phobias, you know, certain kind of animals or other kind of things. But together with what you are correctly underlining, you can have patients which are really unable to tell anything. And very often, when you start so precociously in your life to suffer that much, when you still don't have the capacity because of your entire body, not just your nervous system, to translate an image into something that can be associated. When you don't have the tools that allow you to represent, to manifest your suffering in a certain ways, those pains are usually much more severe. It is so interesting that if you study this, there are so many remedies in our Materia Medica. Let's think about colocynthis, okay? Somebody probably knows it. Where if you study the way that the symptoms are reported in the repertory, you have very few symptoms in the mind sections, and they're not just few. They're very vague, they're very clear. And together with this, you have a lot of very extreme suffering all over the body, in the mouth, in the nose, in the ears, in the extremities, in the stomach, wherever. This has meaning because it's not a badly done proving. It's a very well-known remedy. It is used since years ago. And I think it's a great, gigantic mistake that these remedies are considered acute ones. It's not true. They look to us acute ones because they belong to somebody, as you say, Naila, that probably have an extreme hard time to describe, to represent, to give a name, to give a definition. But usually, not by chance, you see these patients more often in clinics where they treat chronic pains because those pains cannot be represented. And usually they belong to a period of our life when this suffering was intense, invading your whole system, and it was not possible to give a name to that. This is extremely important. Think about that, if I'm not wrong, Kent, many, many years ago, used to prescribe magnesia carbonica to those poor kids that went to, you know, an orphanage, okay? It was interesting that they observed the same things in animals as well. That when they lose their mom, when they are alone with no food, no drink, nothing, in a very chilly situation, they can cry. There is a moment where crying, screaming is useless. And they seem to be resigned, as if they were able to overcome such a suffering. It is exactly the opposite. There is no need. It's a waste of energy to keep crying. It's a waste of water. And so they look to you as somebody who is not complaining anymore, but there is no more reason to complain. Think that for years, not, you know, days, they thought that it was possible to cut off the ears, one of the most, you know, area rich of nerves in our body to dogs, because they were so little, they were puppies, and they were not complaining. It was possible for that to cut away the tail of these animals, to make them looking nicer to us, thinking that they do not suffer. This is not true at all. Only recently, starting better, they were able to demonstrate that babies of few days can suffer as adults. But because we don't have the tool, we don't have, first of all, the mind to think that this is possible, we never investigated in this direction. So only recently, but very recently, it's a matter of a few years ago, we started to think that newborns are suffering in a different way, but a lot. That in the moment that the baby is not crying anymore, it doesn't mean that he's able to overcome his loss. He's suffering even much more. So this kind of field of investigation is something extremely recent in conventional medicine, in psychology as well, but in homeopathy too, because I'm really convinced, according to my experience, that if you're able to investigate in the stories, in the life of these patients, these ones that have no words, that have no eyes, that have no picture, that have no sound to represent their suffering, they suffer much more than the others. They are not at all acute remedies. They are remedies that seems to be acute, but they belong to a very rooted, difficult period of their life, which can be even much more structured than what we try to treat in patients that can talk about their suffering. It's completely different. It's a complete 180% perspective of the idea of suffering.
This is, I'm sorry for another question, because this is very interesting. As if we look at the remedies as well, you mentioned colocynthes and arnica, denying the pain or the suffering, and how does pain become part of a person's identity or way of living in the body?
First of all, I really would like to give you a precise answer. I have more questions than answer in this direction, first of all. But this is the reason why I'm investigating. And I think that there is not one. I think that we should be able to study in a very open way to different ways of working. The idea of individualizing our therapy is close to the idea of individualizing our studies. Unfortunately, as you know, in conventional medicine, very often we start from the point of view that we are a kind of machine. The interest is about our physical body. I insist on that point. Our interest is about our corpus, which is something else, because it is always the corpus of a person, of an individual person. This makes a gigantic difference. I come back to the same concept I was trying to talk before. Nowadays, the concept, the word hysteria, does not exist anymore. But you know, at the time of Charcot, when La Salpêtrière in Paris, they studied those patients, it was so evident that they could complain outrageously, and in the right moment they were hypnotized, the pain was gone. They were even able to move. So they were not doing that on purpose. Please. Their way of suffering was like this. Now, when we study carefully this patient that could look as an hysterical, we call this a kind of hyperesthesia, which means that the way they live into their own body. It's like to say that the body is not a nice place to live with. In this moment that we're talking, you are seated on a chair, Naila. You have your hands on your deck, and you have a dress which is touching your body, okay? You don't care about this. It's much more important what we're doing, what we're talking about. Your senses are very directed in trying to watch my face, Tomomis, and Atik, and to listen to how interesting can be this conversation. But if you could be an hypersensitive one, a kind of hysterical patient, in this moment, while you're trying to listen to us, you should feel your bottom, which needs to be moved. Your hands needs to be put in a different kind of position. You should try to move your clothes because they're touching your body too tight. And it is as if your body is registering this continuously. It is a drama, because instead of being a kind of nice place in which I can live, it's not that you are able to disconnect for a little bit what is not important. Everything is important in the same moment, continuously. This way of suffering is terrible. And it's not that easy to be treated, because when they describe their pain, what is in common is that it is always extreme. They always objective that are too much in every sense and all together continuously. So they are considered hysterical, because it's not possible that you can suffer like this. It's not easy. And in the meantime, you could have patients, as you said before, that despite their intense, profound, deep, long-lasting historical suffering, as cases of colocintis, they are not able to give you a sense. They just scream as a baby. They're not able to tell you if this pain is in my belly, is in my chest, if it is here or there. My entire body is suffering outrageously. It is just too much, and I have no word. I have no representation. Those are two extreme polarities of the way that a pain can be represented. In between these, there are so many other ways of suffering that if we study, I insist, not only from the quantitative point of view, but if we try to recognize in psychotherapy, it is very important, in homeopathy as well, the quality of this pain, you can learn a lot. And not only you can help your patient to learn from his own body how it can be possible. I'm not saying why. I don't believe in why at all. That is not always a causation. But how it is possible that you describe, how you perceive in this way, how it is possible that some people, when they suffer, they do need to stay in the room with no air, with no light, with no sound, and others have to move out and breathe something and move like this. Why it happens something like that? But if you don't give enough space to what is the individuality of how each one is processing his way of functioning, those kind of things cannot be investigated.
Fascinating, isn't it, Tomomi, when we look at this and we look at the mentals and the emotionals as well, and physical pain can make one faint, can make one unconscious, and yet also when we look at mental pain or emotional pain, should I say, it can also do exactly the same, right? Not just from a physical perspective, but it can make us just want to just go away, just not be there in that moment. Very similar things, but it's beautiful what you've said, Massimo, because you've got the physical reality of pain, then you've got the emotional reality of pain. Sometimes they can fuse together, but sometimes they can be very much apart, you know, because of life circumstances and whatnot. It's fascinating, isn't it, Tomomi?
Yes, it is, very much so. I agree. And but that is also then leads to the third seminar, where they can just completely ignore and a denial of pain. which Massimo would like to explore.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yes. Yes, so what we're talking about here, ladies and gentlemen, we do have some good news, don't we? Because the reason for this episode of the Homeopathy Health Show is also to talk about the upcoming seminar with Dr. Massimo Mangilavori, and he's coming to London later this year. And this seminar is on pain, on the topic, on the subject of pain, its expression, and the link to homeopathy and how it can benefit and help.
Yes, as you said, Patrick, the very first one will be dedicated, because the idea is not exactly just suffering, is when our experience is that this suffering is overwhelming, it is too much. So it is more dedicated with the experiences where the suffering is extreme. So in the first case, the first seminar, I hope it will be not too much depressive, we consider an experience that is human, not just human, even animals, they suffer for that, which is mainly when you lost. So one of the most dreadful experiences that each one of us has to make in his life is to lose somebody that we love. It can be a more physiological experience, like when you lose your mom, your dad. When you lose a child, for example, it is something much more dreadful.
Mm.
But it is so interesting that if you give a look into our homeopathic symptoms in our repertory, try to open the symptom of suffering because you lost a child, there are 5 remedies, 6 remedies, something like this. So it is clearly a field of investigation which was not investigated. It is not possible that we do have less than 10 remedies for this kind of tremendous experience of suffering. Mm. So it is interesting that I think, let me say sincerely, very often superficially we face such a situation. In the most of these cases, you give Ignazia Mara or Phosphoricum Acidum or other remedies like Staphysagri or Causticum, and that's it. While if you study in a more appropriate direction, in my experience, there are many more remedies that can be so useful to help a patient to process such an experience. And this is what I would like to start from, because I do believe that when the pain is too much, it is too difficult to endure, to bear. This is the first experience that from the not only from the human point of view, even animals can suffer like this. In the last one, as Tomomi was saying, it will be different. Because as you said before, Naila, when patients are not able to talk about how they suffer, it doesn't mean that they don't. Very often it means that they can't, which is different. They can't in some way using their consciousness. So on purpose, it's hard to touch this point, otherwise I can start to cry for hours. Or often it is an experience which I did with many remedies in the botanical family of some of those Liliaceae. You see that those patients are able in some way to create a kind of cyst around their suffering and even able to deny to their own, to their life experience. Mm-hmm. I had interesting cases of patients that were able to tell me a lot about them. You know, you are a homeopath, you try to collect as much as possible from your patients. And it happened to me that after the third, the fourth consultation, they told me, oh, you know, doctor, I lost a child. Said, what? You lost a child? We met up to now 8 hours and you were never able to mention anything like this to me. And it was not that done on purpose. It was when you prescribe Epar sulfur to a patient, and even if it was not desired, they can open an abscess because you push his vital force in order to process an infection. You can have, as Atik said before, other emotional pains that are not possible to be faced. And the only possibility for certain people is to create a kind of cyst, like in a granuloma, in an abscess around this, and to move away with that. It's like having a corpse in your cellar. You pretend that you don't see it and you have your house invaded by the smell of putrefaction of this corpse.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And these are other kind of a situation where, unfortunately, it could be possible that this poor patient is unable to remember, to talk, to consider, to process it. And first of all, you have to help this person to consider that suffering is a human experience that does exist. Mm. That a pain is not necessarily something that you can consider that has to go away right soon. Certain kind of pains, mainly the ones that are that difficult to bear, need to be processed. And, you know, if in order to heal a rhinitis, you need a couple of days. In order to heal a fracture, you need 2 months. In order to heal a morning, probably you need years. And I think, first of all, it's important to allow this person to recognize this and to work on that, which doesn't mean not to suffer, but how to suffer eventually. What could be the meaning of that? Eventually, how sweet, how profound can be such an experience? I hope I'm clear.
Absolutely. Very, very clear indeed.
Okay.
Which does take us on to this whole series of seminars and also a webinar with reference to pain. And we do have a special webinar coming up at Homeopathy in Practice, Naila and myself. And that's on the 2nd of July, isn't it, Naila, with Dr. Massimo Mangialavori?
Absolutely. And I would love to mention one thing here. From the person who is born to the person who dies, one word or one thing they have all experienced is pain.
Mm.
So everyone has experienced pain, but for homeopaths, it is even more crucial to understand from a homeopath's point of view, from a patient's point of view, what pain actually is in homeopathy. Pain management is in homeopathy. So everyone, if you also have patients coming to you for pain management or for any types of physical, emotional, psychological, there are different types of pains, do join us on the 2nd of July 2026 at 7 p.m. UK time for a free webinar where Massimo is going to go a little deeper. We'll give you a prelude to his upcoming in-person masterclass in UK. The first date is 24th and 25th of October, and we'll get other dates to you at the end as well. Tumumi will let us know, and we are also going to put them in the notes as well for all of you to join. Tumumi, we are also going to link the booking details and everything with this, because I personally, as a homeopath, think this webinar is this series of webinars, seminars is very, very important for us homeopaths. Do you have anything to say as a homeopath, Tumumi?
Well, I think as a homeopath, one of the most important skill is our listening and our ability to connect. So I think it is even more important that you, if you can, attend in person and to share this experience in person, because I think there is much more to our listening and perceiving patients than just the voice, obviously. So I think it will be really good if we can all experience that ourselves in person with Massimo in London. Obviously, there is this amazing technology as well, so we will be broadcasting for people who are living a little bit far away. But that is one of the reasons why we picked London, because it's quite accessible even you live in other parts of the world. So please consider coming in person.
Absolutely. And also, Nyla and I having experienced our event that we held with the School of Homeopathy in March of this year, having you, Dr. Massimo, in person, it was a totally different experience. And it will definitely be worth not only coming, but learning from a great, great, renowned teacher. It's going to be a wonderful, inspiring experience. I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Tune in every week for inspiring conversations, bringing you all things health and well-being to your radio and podcast apps.
The more exposure the Homeopathy Health Show receives, the better for homeopathy around the world.
And please do support the show by clicking follow on our socials.
You can find us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk and on Facebook and Instagram at Homeopathy in Practice. Do give us a follow on there. Let's promote the voice of homeopathy around the world together. Until next time, stay safe and take care.